The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Listen on demand wherever you get your podcasts or watch us live on YouTube.
Here in Washington, it is State of the Union Day, and we are all gearing up to watch with anticipation the president's address to a joint session of Congress tonight. Mm-hmm. We're playing the game of how long the speech will go, maybe an hour, maybe up to an hour and a half, but frankly, there's a lot of content that could be packed in.
That's true.
And foreign policy is probably going to feature pretty heavily in the speech. We're already getting some clues, Joe, as to what exactly in that regard the president could announce tonight.
That's a great point. Look, they're going to cover a lot of ground here. This is, the proverbial laundry list of priorities. But yes, the situation in the Middle East, coming off our conversation earlier today with Rick and Jeannie, the uncommitted vote that we saw on Super Tuesday and in Michigan, and a president who's suggested that Israel's response has been over the top. We have breaking news on the terminal here that the president will direct the U.S. military to establish a temporary port, build a Gaza port on the Gaza coast to ramp up the delivery of aid. This would be a significant development, Kaylee. Mm-hmm. We were talking about airdrops just a week ago.
Absolutely. And it raises the question of whether this is the administration having to find ways to go around Israel or exactly how that relationship is working as the U.S. makes moves like this.
100%. We begin our conversation with that backdrop with Amos Hochstein, is with a senior advisor to President Biden for energy and investment, and with us now from the White House. Amos, it's great to see you. There are a lot of things we'd love to ask you about when it comes to energy policy. I wonder if this is in your portfolio, what the president will announce tonight when it comes to Gaza.
Well, great to be with you as well. And this is an exciting day where the president can really talk to the American people about both the achievements of the last 3 years and where the world is today and the vision for the future. So clearly, he has spent an enormous amount of time working on the Middle East over the last several months since the attacks of Hamas on October 7th and trying to bring the hostages, the Israeli hostages and American hostages home and achieving a ceasefire through that process while also making sure that enough humanitarian assistance enters Gaza during this time of conflict.
Well, and as Joe mentioned, that may now include trying to get aid through Gaza, through the waterways by establishing a port. But of course, one of the ongoing conversations around the conflict in the Middle East, not just when it comes to the direct conflict between Israel and Hamas, but also what we're seeing in the Red Sea with the Houthis, some of the other activity has been going on, is whether or not it was going to be disruptive to energy flows, which of course is in your purview, Amos. Should we expect to hear from the president about that tonight to potentially ease concerns that what is happening abroad will affect prices at the pump at home?
Well, I think, as you know, we've talked about this before, the president has been laser focused on the American economy and bringing costs down. And over the last 3 years, he has really directed the economy and presiding today over the strongest economy on the planet. That has a lower inflation, lower cost to the American families, and that includes energy prices, while at the same time we have manufacturing and with low unemployment. And that is really, he did this by focusing on bringing costs down to the middle class, the American public, and focusing on the strength of that middle class. So when it comes to how do you get to that, to achieve this kind of an economy, not only today as we sit here, but also focusing on the future, you have to look at what's happening domestically and internationally. And despite the fact that the Houthis have been attacking ships in the Red Sea, costs have been relatively, the cost impact has been muted. We have worked with the private sector, with the shipping companies and everyone else to make sure that alternatives are there and that the costs don't affect consumers, especially here at home. And I think that's been largely achieved. And the president will continue to focus, as he'll outline today, on the policies of expanding and accelerating the energy transition while ensuring that the current energy mix that we have today is maintained, is strong, and is affordable.
You were just in Lebanon, Amos Hochstein, meeting with leaders there. Are you confident, following your talks and your time spent there with leaders, that Israel will not open a wider war, a new front to the north?
Well, as you said, I was in Lebanon on Monday and in Israel on Tuesday, and to make sure that we convey to all sides that a diplomatic option here is the right way to go, to enable Israelis to go back to their homes in the northern Israel safely and securely without worrying about further attacks. And the same is true for Lebanese communities returning to their homes. We've had a sort of a low level or a lower level of conflict going on for 5 months. And the president has been clear that he believes that we should exhaust all diplomatic efforts to get there. And I believe that it is possible. Clearly, all the dots in the Middle East conflict are connected, whether we like that or not. And so we have to work on this in unison with some of the other efforts that we're doing. But we are clearly pushing for a peaceful and secure diplomatic option.
Well, Amos, part of what the president will be doing tonight is making the case for another 4 years, because if he is not elected to a second term, his work ends next January. And I just wonder, when we're thinking about what's happening in the Middle East, how much you think conflict there will be resolved, how much progress realistically can be made by November or at the latest January, or will this take another 4 years to sort out?
Look, I think the president's been working tirelessly and personally to bring an end to this conflict as soon as possible, to bring back the hostages home, and to do that while maintaining a ceasefire and to bring an end to this conflict as soon as possible, much sooner than the timelines that you're referring to. He is very focused on this. So I think we're going to talk about, I think you're right, the speech tonight is about what we've done and what he has been able to do over the last 3 years and where we're going to be going in the next four. And I think that the American leadership around the world is without question enhanced and strengthened. Keeping the world together has been critically important. Maintaining the strongest economy in the world gives us additional leverage and ability to lead. And look, there's no doubt that there's connectivity between what we do at home and what we do around the world. Strengthening democracy, strengthening our institutions, and making sure that we have a healthy economy that is not just about based on an old time, you know, scenario or vision of enriching 1 or 2% of the economy and that will promote the rest, but rather building out that middle class, creating a stronger economy that is focused on the future. That future that you're talking about is what gives us the strength. The Inflation Reduction Act, I can tell you wherever I go in the world, even in Lebanon in the middle of a conflict, they talk about the Inflation Reduction Act and what the president is doing to strengthen the American economy.
Lastly, Amos, you've been very generous with your time. I want to ask you about the president's pause on LNG export approvals. I don't know if this is an issue he plans to address tonight. I suspect this might come up, but I wonder if it's possible this turns into a permanent moratorium.
You know, I think what the president announced, or actually the Department of Energy announced, is a pause so that we can look at the factors. But we have to level set, because there's been a lot of talk about this. The reality today is that we are the largest exporter of LNG in the world. And from a base, from that base in the market of being the largest, we will double our exports capacity between now and 2028. So what we're saying is that is not in question and that is not on pause. What is on pause is to say beyond that, beyond 2020, beyond 2020, 2030, do we need to look for a minute and say, with such exponential growth that we've seen, do we need to look at the economic impact on the market impact? And do we have to look at what the environmental and climate impacts are on the communities that live along our Gulf Coast before we say we're going to give more permits? So do we even need more facilities is a good question to ask. I don't know the answer to that. There have been different projections of where demand is going to be. So I think his focus is going to continue to be tonight, tomorrow, for the next 5 years on accelerating the energy transition, but we have the energy mix and the energy security for us and for our allies.
All right, Amos, thank you so much for joining us on this State of the Union Day. Amos Hochstein, Senior Advisor to the President for Energy and Investment. We appreciate you joining us on Bloomberg Television and Radio live from the White House. Now we want to get another voice into this conversation, and we're joined now by Jane Hall, American University Associate Professor of Journalism and Media Studies, also author of Politics in the Media, Intersections and New Directions. Jane, great to have you. There's been a lot of talk about how the president's speech tonight, while it will be about policy, it perhaps even more so will be about presentation, because this also is about the perception that at 81 years old, Joe Biden is too old for the job and shouldn't be elected to a second term for that reason. What really matters this evening?
You know, I think it all matters. I think the subtext is he up to the job? And if he, God forbid, trips, or seems to be moving slowly, that will be something that will be played by the Republicans and, frankly, conservative networks as well. So a moment for him is to simply be vigorous and deliver the speech well, maybe even mix it up a little bit, you know, with some of the GOP. Yeah. If they shout at him, perhaps to remain statesmanlike, but also show that he can mix it up. You know, they're talking about letting Biden be Biden. And I think one of the very interesting things in your speaker just now is that they are going to try, it would seem to me, to paint a picture that this is a person who has a vision for a second term, that you don't want Donald Trump for a second term. And the memory of a lot of people has faded. And so the international piece is very important, obviously. I teach young people, I teach college students, they're very concerned about the deaths in Gaza. That is a place where he is losing a lot of voters. He is associated in a lot of young people's minds with one side of this conflict. Also, I think he also has to deal with the fact that he wants to say to people, we have this tremendously strong economy, when in fact people have not been feeling that. You know, people see it in inflation and he's being stuck with that. And so I think he probably needs to do what Bill Clinton was famous for, which is, I feel your pain. We're working on this. Yeah. But I also think he's got to show that he's on the side of working people, which has been something he's said many, many times. And somehow that message has gotten somewhat faded in the American mind. It, you know, we could debate why that is, but to say this is what we did with the Inflation Reduction Act, you know, probably many people don't know what they did.
Yeah, much of this is going to be reminding folks of what's been done, which brings us to the audience. Jane, you're a media expert. Is he talking to the people in the room at all tonight, or is this really about people in their living rooms? He's going to be looking all the way across all of those heads in the chamber to the cameras all the way in the back of the room to make eye contact with me sitting on my couch, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, people, this is one of those collective events. People will be tuning in. You know, this is an important event, especially that we now know that it's going to be a rematch. Unless something drastic changes, that it's going to be Biden versus Trump. He is going to be playing to the audience at home, and he's also got to at least address the audience in the room. And I'll be interested to see how much does he go after the GOP? How much does he talk about how Trump, in many people's views, killed a bipartisan immigration bill? I don't think he's going to go too near immigration. I think he's probably going to be playing to an audience at home and saying, I feel your pain, I'm on your side, remember me as the guy that was that and is that. That's where I think he's gonna be trying to speak. But again, if there's a moment where he seems to falter, that is going to be a viral video. And so he's got to not have that happen. Regrettably, that would be picked up all over the place.
Mm-hmm. And Jane, we have less than a minute yet left with that, which actually ties into this question. Isn't this also in part about sound bites that are going to be replayed on TikTok and on social media perpetually? This isn't about the speech in its entirety, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's what the pundits, it's what you and we and everybody else on networks that have different opinions, cable news being huge about this. You know, if he makes a mistake, that'll be picked up by people who don't like him and don't want him to win. TikTok is very important. Again, I know that from my students. And they're, you know, getting out there with those bites that work to different audiences is partially going to be in the hands of this very fractured media environment we're in right now.
That's very true. All right, Jane Hall of American University, thank you so much for joining us. The young voters and the TikTok generation, perhaps they're one and the same. We'll have more coming up on Bloomberg TV and radio.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY.
Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
Kaylee, I've been making the point all day. When we get bogged down in the division and the horribleness of politics in America right now, we can sometimes forget some of the wonderful things that take place in politics and in Washington. This would be one of them. Mm. It's like Oscar night in town. And I know people will probably be yelling and screaming by the time it's over.
Surely.
But the pomp and the history that surrounds this event is one of the wonderful things that we get to do.
Absolutely. I mean, think of all of the iconic images of State of the Union's past when you have the Speaker of the House behind one shoulder, the vice president behind the other shoulder of the president. I think we all remember pretty well during the Trump years, some of the things Speaker Nancy Pelosi did during and after the State of the Union.
I don't think we're ripping up any scripts.
I don't know if we'll rip up any scripts tonight. Of course, this will be the first time that House Speaker Mike Johnson has a chance to appear in this capacity.
That's true. He'll be over one shoulder and Kamala Harris the other. And with us for the duration, Kaylee's going to be here at the desk in our bureau, along with Rick Davis and Jeannie Shanzano. I'll be joining from Capitol Hill, and our signature panel is with us right now. Jeannie, this is a big night. Mr. Speaker, Joe Biden will come down the aisle, hugs and handshakes. At some point, the applause will die down, and then the real stuff begins. How much of a coliseum is he stepping into tonight?
It is a huge night. And, you know, I was just looking back. Who in the modern American, you know, political landscape has sat through more states of the union than Joe Biden. And, you know, he gets to Congress in 1973, he leaves the White House in 2017. By my calculation, he's just at about 50 years. So nobody should be better prepared to do their final state of the union for the first term than Joe Biden, having sat through so many. So, you know, he defied expectations last year. The big question is, does he do that again tonight? I think he does have things to talk about. Number one in my mind is the economy. If I was him, I would take a lesson from Donald Trump and I would talk about those good numbers that the Wall Street Journal poll told about the economy. And I would not use the term inflation. I would talk about cost of living and I would blame corporations for driving up these costs. And I would talk about what you're going to do to combat that. In other words, Joe Biden on the side of the middle and working class.
Well, to Jeannie's point, Rick, this may be one of, what, 50 some odd State of the Unions that President Biden will have been a part of. But this one is also different because this is also a speech that he is giving after the general election has effectively begun. Is this about the State of the Union or the state of the reelection campaign?
Yeah, you're right. This is the first one of these kinds of speeches that he has had to give. And the reality is this is a campaign speech, regardless of what the formal requirement or opportunity it is for the president to declare the state of the nation in front of Congress and the Supreme Court. Well, you know, that's nice. You know, that's, as Joe said, a great tradition that we love here in Washington, D.C. But he will have the largest number of people listening to him since his presidency started. This is going to be an incredibly important State of the Union compared to the previous three. And what he's going to have to do is convince people that, you know, he believes in Americans' greatness. He believes that we've pulled ourselves together after COVID and created an engine of economic reform, that we have more influence in the world than we've ever had, you know, that the future is bright. Because when I look at all the numbers that tend to, you know, give Biden and his campaign problems, it's the direction of the country. People believe what Donald Trump is selling, which is our country is in decline and our presence in the world is less influential than it used to be. And we just need to hunker down and pay attention to our own people and let the rest of the world take care of itself. And that is a stark contrast to what Joe Biden needs to sell tonight. But he has to explain why those things are important. Why is it important to be the leader of the world? Why is it important that we have a strong economy at home to project power abroad? Why is it important that we stand up to our enemies and adversaries around the world? I think this needs to be more of a storytelling session than an iteration of his accomplishments in office and how many lobbyists got what into the speech, you know, for tonight. Mm-hmm. I think he has to change it up a little bit.
Pieces are in place for some storytelling. When you look at the guest list, Jeannie, much has been made about those who did not accept the First Lady of Ukraine and the widow of Alexei Navalny. But Joe Biden's going to point up to that box, and he's going to call out Latoria Beasley, a woman from Alabama who was awaiting an embryo transfer as part of her in vitro fertilization treatment when her procedure was canceled due to the state Supreme Court's ruling. Sean Fain is going to be asked to stand up, the head of the UAW. The Swedish prime minister will be there. Jeannie, what do you think of this lineup and the contours of the speech that will surround these names?
It's incredibly important. And I'm so glad you raised the woman from Alabama. We can add to that Katie Cox, who was unable to get an abortion when she needed one for medical reasons, famously in Texas, and had to leave the state. That is all going to be part of a really important theme in this speech, which is to juxtapose what is going to happen if the country goes back to a Donald Trump and hands the country over to the Republican, MAGA Republican Party of today, which is the president is going to make the case that you can bet we are going to be looking at a federal law banning the right to choose. I mean, just take a glimpse at who the Republicans nominated for the governor of North Carolina just Tuesday, somebody who famously says there should be no right to choose and there should be no grounds for exceptions to that right. Look at Alabama, look at Texas. So he's going to use the issue of reproductive rights. We know that. He should use the issue of NATO, really importantly, the idea that we have a representatives from Sweden there. You know, if you go back a few years, nobody would think that Sweden would be joining NATO. And yet they are the 32nd country to join because of what Russia has done, and the House needs to, specifically the GOP, fund the Ukraine war. Most Republicans want to. They've been held up by this recalcitrant end. So he's got a lot of those themes, and those guests are going to play right into them. I'm glad Sean Fain is going to be there. I think he has done something incredible with the labor movement, the UAW strike, the president first to go out there and to join a line and strike and got the endorsement. Sean Fain, somebody he needs there. Maybe he helps pull some of his members over. So the lineup of guests is critical. Of course, wish the Ukrainian first lady and, of course, Navalny's widow were going to be there. But, of course, there's very good reasons they are not attending.
Well, as Jeannie talks about the issue of Ukraine, funding for which still has not passed in the House, it's worth noting, Rick, that even though we just had a conversation about how this is a campaign speech that the president is making to the American people, he is also there physically in the room with the entirety of Congress. How much does he need to use this as an opportunity to make his case, not just for that supplemental emergency funding for allies, but also for a border deal that the House has refused to take up?
Yeah, I think outside of talking about the strength of the economy that he's produced as president, the single most important thing he has to address is the porous southern border. It is now the glaring defect in his administration, especially anything related to domestic policy. This shines above. And we see in the public polling that it is emerging as the number one issue in many states across the country that voters are concerned about going into the election year. So I think he has to be very direct. We have talked ever since the Republicans failed to pass the more comprehensive reform as part of the supplemental, that this was an opportunity for Joe Biden to pounce on. And nothing has been done. He goes down to the border. He doesn't say anything about a new policy or get tough. This is his chance. I know that the Biden people I've talked to, the supporters he has around states, are desperate for some signal of strength coming from this administration that gives them a talking point on the border different than what they had going into the speech tonight. Question is, does he deliver?
We've got less than a minute here, Jeannie. We heard from the chief of staff, Jeff Zients, talk about raising the bar. You're going to see a very energized president, he said. This is a big moment, and this president rises to those big moments. Is the White House making this more difficult than he needs to do? What, is he going to swing in on a rope?
Gosh, wouldn't that be something? We will be there to watch. You know, I think they are making the point that he is vigorous and we are going to see the real Joe Biden out there, and as we did last year. I think they are hoping that happens. But as your previous guest was just talking about, there is a danger to that because these things will go viral if he does have a slip up. So these are high stakes for the Biden team tonight. But again, nobody more experienced to do this tonight than Joe Biden.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY.
Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at stiefel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stiefel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Listen on demand wherever you get your podcasts or watch us live on YouTube.
But it comes down, of course, to messaging, to nuance here for the president of the United States. And this is something that's been a concerted effort for many days. The president spent a long weekend at Camp David working on the speech. And it's going to be, of course, candidate Joe Biden we're hearing from just as much as it is President Joe Biden who we are hearing from. Megan Hayes, Democratic strategist and former special assistant to the president, is with us now to talk about it. Spent time in this Biden White House as the director of message planning, which is exactly the point of this entire operation. She helped to prepare the president for States of the Union past. And Megan, it's great to see you back here at the table. Thank you for coming in. Talk to me about the closing hours on a State of the Union day like this. Nothing else matters inside the West Wing.
No, you know, you'll see the president doing rehearsing his speech from a teleprompter in one of the rooms in the residence. He will also be going through and making edits to the speech in real time. He'll have his team of advisors, so there'll be adjustments and changes right up to the very last minute till he gives his speech tonight.
Mm-hmm. This is something that is months in the making. When does the process begin?
It probably begins, you know, early, right before the holiday season starts. Yeah. They start to think about the messaging and what drives what he wants to drive. There's also a lot of contextualizing around bringing the people in from the box that the First Lady has and making sure that those stories are people that he's met on the road or different things. When I was there, we had someone from that we had met in Virginia who introduced him, who was a teenager who had his insulin costs lowered. Mm-hmm. So that process had started, you know, months out, and mm-hmm. then they just keep refining it and refining it. And, you know, I'm sure they have polling that also dictates some of it now that there's a campaign in place.
Yeah. It's added pressure this time for the president now, of course, running for re-election, but hearing stories and reading analysis every day about his age. Seems like they're raising the bar on this. Jeff Zients, the chief of staff, did a bunch of interviews saying, get ready for an energized Joe Biden. What's the deal with that? Are they making their lives more difficult here?
Yeah, to be honest, I think so. The president has never been someone who gives speeches that are super energetic. That's just not his strength. The president is more of a one-on-one politician, as everyone knows. I do think that this is one speech in a moment in time. Voters in November aren't going to think back, you know, 8 months before and be like, oh, that State of the Union speech, that really changed how I was going to vote. That's not really what's going to happen here. So I do think it is important. You don't want the news cycle to get away from you, and you don't want to make a bunch of gaffes unnecessarily and have a bunch of unnecessary news cycles continuing about your age or your low energy. So it is important for him to hit the mark. I just think we need to lower expectations a little bit and really focus on what the State of the Union address is.
Okay, so let's talk about it, because we're reporting that he's going to make the call for higher taxes on the wealthy. That's a long and consistent refrain for Joe Biden. He's also going to try to talk about accomplishments tonight as well. How much do you need to balance, especially when you're running for re-election, what's been done and what is left to do?
I think that he needs to draw a fair balance. He also needs to draw a contrast to Trump. He mm-hmm. needs to show people why it is important to vote for the things that his vision for the future, and show people what he's done for them. I think he needs to make it more granular, though, than just fighting for democracy and raising taxes. He needs to show people how he's changing costs for things, because people, everyday people who are his voters and his base, are thinking how they can't pay for their groceries. Mm-hmm. So he needs to really show an impact of where he's improved their lives.
We're spending time with Megan Hayes, Democratic strategist, someone who's been there and been in the room helping to prepare the president for a State of the Union like tonight. The spontaneity that the president enjoyed last year is something they're trying to duplicate. That can be a dangerous game. How do you start gaming out potential scenarios and workshopping lines that might work in the heat of the moment?
Well, unfortunately for this president, that's not really a possibility. The president is very sarcastic and witty all on his own.
Okay.
So he will just live in the moment.
To do that.
I mean, I'm not sure. The president is...
The team, you know, the so-called team preparing him. They will trust him with that.
They will trust him to an extent. I mean, they will say to him, like, he'll ask, do you think it's a good idea if I respond to X criticism or Y criticism? But at the end of the day, the president is a very witty and sarcastic person.
And it's about the moment.
Yeah, and it's going to...
Did you know that conversion line was coming last year?
I did not.
The Social Security line? So that was something that he... just came up with in the moment. That's the perfect thing.
Exactly.
The moment you cannot plan for. Should he be preparing for a hostile crowd?
I mean, I think that there's going to be the normal heckling. I think that what...
The normal heckling. It wasn't that long ago. That wasn't normal.
That's fair. That's totally fair. Sorry, the heckling that he's been used
to. But this is normal now. This is part of the gig.
Absolutely. I do... What I would wonder is how much heckling is going to be from the Democratic side versus the Republican side. You kind of already know what the Republicans are going to say, but are you going to have members of Congress that are out there, you know, saying something about a ceasefire in Gaza or those sorts of protests from your own team?
Yeah, amazing. The guests were released. I found it interesting, and we might have talked about this the other day on Balance of Power. Those who were not coming made news. The First Lady of Ukraine decided not to take an invitation. The widow of Alexei Navalny did not. Will this be a big part of the show as usual, the guests who are in the First Lady's box?
Yeah, I think the guests play a part, right? They are there to amplify portions of his speech. They bring forth a moment. They go to those folks and they cut away when he is talking about those specific moments in time, like I mentioned when we had the kid there with insulin.
Yes.
I don't think it's unusual that the people who declined.
Yeah. Sean Fain is going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Head of the UAW.
Yes.
The Swedish prime minister, of course, a new ally and member of the NATO alliance, will be there. Maria Shriver. Latoria Beasley, a woman from Alabama who was awaiting an embryo transfer as part of her in vitro fertilization when her procedure was abruptly canceled by the ruling. This is clearly something the president's going to spend time on.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that reproductive freedom and rights to women having autonomy with their body is a huge issue moving into November. I do think that's one way that he can peel away some votes from Trump and the Nikki Haley folks that were voting for her. That I think that's one way he can get those people. I think it's an extremely important issue. So I think highlighting the IVF ruling in Alabama is huge.
And call for restoring Roe v. Wade.
Absolutely. And a bigger message. It all sort of goes together with that.
Yep, absolutely. Does he need to make news on the border tonight? Executive action, an announcement of some sort of action?
I think he needs to say that there's going to be more movement. I think calling for a bipartisan bill is important, but he just did that, and the Republicans didn't play ball with it. So it's just he's in a tough spot with the border. Republicans are always going to think it's his fault when, at the end of the day, they're the ones that ultimately stalled the bill from moving forward. So he's in a little bit of a tough spot. I don't know that he will call for, I don't think he'll do an executive action.
Is this a president who's making tweaks in the motorcade on the way to the Hill, or is this baked?
Oh, no, he's making tweaks. This is one of the bones of contentions with your colleagues in the media. They would always want the remarks,
right.
And we're like, we'll give them to you when we have them. So it's always been a bone of contention there.
Thank you for sharing your firsthand experience with us, as always. Megan Hayes, Democratic strategist on this State of the Union Day. Glad you're with us. I'm Joe Matthew in Washington. This is Bloomberg. Thanks for listening to the Balance of Power podcast. Make sure to subscribe if you haven't already at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find us live every weekday from Washington, D.C. at noontime Eastern at Bloomberg.com.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.